The Tom Woods Show, episode 2269.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody, we all know it is time for us to break up, but everybody's status quo bias is standing in the way of this obvious and humane solution. Check out my brand new ebook called National Divorce, The Peaceful Solution to Irreconcilable Differences, which you can get for free at nationaldivorce.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I am delighted to be joined by Hawk Jensen, and I want to set the stage here a little bit. I didn't have time to fish through and find out what episode number it was, but those of you who listen pretty consistently may recall an episode I did not too terribly long ago with somebody who was heading up a very important documentary film project, a docuseries on the effects of lockdowns on society. And this series is being put together by some rather experienced filmmakers who, in general, prefer to stay anonymous for reasons that I suppose will be obvious to everybody listening. But the project has been moving along quite well, and we are on the verge of the premiere of episode one. And that premiere will take place in Orlando, which is right next to where I live, so that I don't know that this is necessarily done for this reason. I don't want to be vain, but so that I can host the evening alongside our friend Clifton Duncan, who is the Broadway actor I also featured on the show back on episode 2001, who sacrificed everything. He sacrificed everything to resist the shot mandate. He just said, I don't need it and I'm not doing it. And it just turned his life upside down. And he's been a heroic person this whole time. So if you'd like to attend that, the exact location is just about to be determined, but it will be in Orlando at a theater. Get your tickets. They cost nothing, but it would help us with the numbers if you would nevertheless register at tomwoods.com/documentary. So anyway, Hawk, let's talk about your background. Fill the folks in as to what you do and what you've done in the past.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me on. And thanks to all your listeners for being supportive of all this stuff that you support in this project, Follow the Science. So I'm a Los Angeles trained director, writer, producer, and artist. I'm a bit of a journeyman of various stripes. And I came up through the trenches of film sets, working on many studio feature films, TV shows, commercials, independent films, and got trained as a director, had a great mentor, and segued into television writing for a number of years. And I had top representation and worked with a bunch of very well-known showrunners, sold some scripts to original studios and whatnot, and had a very strong mainstream career. And around 2012, I decided to start my own production company, a company called Smock Media. And I decided to focus on documentary films. That was sort of the early days of the dawn of the golden era of documentaries these days. And I really focused on human rights advocacy and human freedom communities. I generally felt that cinema, it's an incredible medium where you're really creating a world for your audience to step into. And I felt it was just being wasted on commercials and entertainment at large. And I, through my documentary filmmaking, really focused on dissidents and free thinkers and critical thinkers and people who were experiencing oppression and suppression in collectivist regimes or other type of authoritarian regimes. And so I used the medium to celebrate and promote the dissidents and create, I would argue, profound film works about them. And I've worked with dissidents all around the world who have suffered through all sorts of oppressive regimes. I'll just say briefly, you can see my body of work in general at hawkjensen.com. But that experience and that knowledge base I had really, shall we say, self-evidently prepared me for what happened when COVID-19 entered our story. This new series, Follow the Science series, is my latest work as an independent dissident filmmaker. I'm the director of the pilot and series and produced it with my colleagues, as you mentioned, who are members of the Sound Mind Creative Group that we formed an anonymous group to counter cancel culture so that we could all work on it without fear of retribution. Since I was already a fairly out there filmmaker with my views, I felt that it was okay for me to go public and push this thing. And so we're really excited to have come together and work on this. And I'll just quickly add that, you know, we have the premiere coming up on February 22nd, but we're actually having a sneak peek preview on February 8th for our donor base and support network. It'll be a nearly completed version, but we are really excited to show it to the people. We've had over 1,000 donors including yourself, Tom, who supported us in making this. And we're excited to show it to them and give them an opportunity to give us feedback and help sculpt it in terms of its final iteration. So we're really excited to be nearly finished. And it's been one hell of a project to work on in the middle of these last 2 years when everyone else sort of was stuck at home doing what they could to live a normal life. I've been traveling the world, meeting dissident scientists, dissident individuals, just general Americans who have suffered under the lockdowns and getting their story, capturing their story, and trying to really archive what the ordinary world was like before SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19 showed up and started changing everything and getting government up in everyone's business, as I might like to say. So that's my, here's my quick bio, if you will, and how I came to be involved with the project.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that I was a donor to this, because I want people to know I put my money where my mouth is. I don't say to people, well, you guys go do this. It would be great if you guys went and did this. I am doing it first, and then I'd like other people to follow me in it. So yeah, so I gave 10 grand to it because I feel like this is a message that's got to get out there, because I don't want to live in a society where the conventional wisdom remains unchallenged, that the lockdown saved us and Fauci saved us and all this. I cannot want that. And I can't just sit back and hope that things go my way. I have to do something active to make things happen. And so this is one of those things. And if you do go to tomwoods.com/documentary, there is also an option to support the project, which still does need some support as it continues. Give me a little bit of the background without obviously revealing the identity of these people, but at least maybe qualitatively, can you just tell me something about the kind of work that the other people on the team have done in the past so that we realize these really are serious filmmakers?
Sure, yeah. I would say it's a whole host of journeymen and master filmmakers of various stripes. You know, I would say that we cover pretty much the gamut. We have writers, we have directors, we have producers, but we also have top-notch animators, top-notch editors, top-notch composers and whatnot. And it's the kind of thing where you go through it. I actually didn't bring a pull up the list, but I mean, you know, the blockbuster films. I mean, there's just been, you know, I think between the main core group, and we have something like 250 years of experience on mainstream films in the last 20 years. So lots of good, strong names. It's interesting when you work in Hollywood, because it's very much, there's like, oh, is it films you've heard of? And I had a friend, a screenwriter friend, who sold something like, I don't know, 10 scripts, made millions of dollars, and not one was ever made. There's this whole world of hardworking filmmakers who have the experience, but you may not have heard the materials. So it's always been interesting, the sort of relationship between, I mean, for every one project that sells, only one gets made. Every four that gets made, three get shelved. There's this whole kind of strange space for working in the industry and the names you've heard of. But we definitely have a long who's who's list of what people have worked on. So it's an impressive group. And a lot of us were freedom oriented. A lot of us would moonlight in the sort of freedom community and the activist community and make projects. I made a lot of projects. I worked for Reason for a time, Reason Foundation, Reason Magazine, and made like 100 projects for them, all pushing for freedom of expression. I mean, at the end of the day, I consider myself a radical self-expressionist. I believe self-expression is the central tenet of human ingenuity driving all of humanity forward. That makes it very simple for me to be pro First Amendment, pro freedom of speech, pro freedom of expression. And to see something like these lockdowns come along where, yes, there was some great concern about a new virus and there were vulnerable people, but there was a sort of top-down carte blanche policies that were never fully explained, crushed individual expression and conversation, and really pitted the communities against each other. So and just to bring it back to you, I mean, Tom, you were the one who actually on your show, one of our producers is an avid fan, and you said, you know what, someone really had to make a proper Hollywood-style film about this and bring in Reason and bring in the numbers and bring in statistics. And you know, I think it was the next day I got a call from this producer, and he said, hey, I think we need to do this. I think we're the people to do this. And I think we should approach Tom as like, we want to manifest what you visualized in your episode.
Wow.
And, yeah. So you were the seed of it all, and not just
well.
The,
so, any of these late nights working on the project where you're miserable and you hate yourself, you can just blame me.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. You nailed it. I mean, when you make a film, you live it and breathe it. I mean, I'm still in a time warp. I still live in 2020. My job was to capture the ordinary world in the filmmaking parlance, where you want to start with the ordinary world. Where were you? What was the norm? What was life like when before the story started? And before that call to action came along, I went around the world talking to all sorts of folks, one of whom I'll just quickly name. Like, one of our main scientists is Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, who's gained quite a bit of renown these days. But I mean, from him all the way to restaurant owners and families who have lost loved ones due to medical negligence and other aspects not related to COVID, but more lockdown related, asking each and every one of, where were you when you first heard of COVID? Where were you when you first heard of lockdowns? When did you realize it was going to be something that affected you? And it's been fascinating to really capture that and document that. And we have a huge library. We did about 30, 40 interviews and just capturing the essence of what the experience was like. And I'll fast forward a little bit to say that now these days when I am working 23 hours a day on this thing and can't really focus on anything else because you basically become the project, and I'll get together some discrete test audiences and show them a piece of the film, piece of the project, piece of the pilot. And they won't actually, you know, as a filmmaker and typical entertainment stuff, you're like, oh, did you like it? Did you laugh? Was it serious? Did it capture you? Would you like the coloring? I don't know. I mean, just some sort of general response. I get very little of that. Everyone immediately goes right into what their experience was at the time because everyone can relate to it. I mean, everyone had an experience with this in the form of everyone you met and everywhere you've ever been also had to deal with the lockdowns. And it's the first true worldwide experience. And during that, as you and your listeners very well know, you weren't really allowed to talk about the flavor of the week issue that was brought up. And then once it was dropped, you weren't allowed to go back and look at it. So we're going through that step by step, what occurred sort of from January 2020 to about October 2020, and looking at what was said, what was brought up, why was it brought up, why was it not really discussed fully, and then why was it dropped unceremoniously, never to be discussed again. And you just mention these things to people, and people, it's like they just have it right at the tip of their tongue. It's like, oh yeah, they get to express what they wanted to then, but weren't able to. And it's really powerful to see that. So I'm very excited to be sharing this soon so people can have that experience.
Well, then let me duplicate what you did with other people and ask, when did you first hear about COVID? And then secondly, how did it affect your life?
Yeah, well, I was living in Santa Barbara at the time, and I had, for various reasons, had decided to leave LA and take a break. I'd been there for 20 years. And it was a baby step. I was thinking about leaving California. And so I have a sister and some nephews who live up north. So I went and lived with them for a little time just to, let's just say I wanted a little recovery from California or from Los Angeles. And before I left, I wanted a little time with my nephews. And then one day the word came along that there was something, you know, that early, like I was kind of, I keep track of the sort of, I look at the fringe political stuff, like word coming down and that, hey, this new virus is coming along. And I've seen, you know, there were the, between all the H1N1 and bird flu and SARS, MERS, I mean, there's always been this attempt to sort of create a panic around this. And it's like, oh, here comes another one. Oh, it seems to be a little bit bigger. Oh, yeah, the toilet paper's starting to disappear. Okay, I'm not worried about the virus per se, but I'm gonna start preparing my family to make sure we're okay should a panic set in. Maybe I had a day or two of like, well, there's an unknown, there's this virus, but really per my working with dissidents, per my understanding of authoritarian regimes, I really saw it as like, well, this is it. This is going to be used as a big opportunity to reset society. This will be used as such. It's not going to last 2 weeks. And having worked so hard on other people's stories, I was like, you know, I just want to get myself situated into a new life that I feel comfortable with. So I wrote out the initial lockdown with my family, rebuilt the house into a school. It was four boys. So, you know, I was very happy to be with them during that. But I had always kept my California existence into like a 30-day bug out type scenario. I just knew that California wasn't meant for me in the long term. So I bought a travel trailer and headed out in January 2021 and traveled America. And I went to all the national parks that were closed. You couldn't spend the night, but I would go during the day and then find somewhere to camp on private lands and just hit the road and did my part to keep freedom of movement a thing in this country. The lockdowns were still technically on, and I was having none of it, to be perfectly honest, and just headed east and decided I wanted to keep heading east till I felt like I was where I wanted to be. And I ended up back in New Hampshire, where I grew up. And boy, it just felt like the ordinary world I knew before. I mean, they took reasonable responses in the beginning and then moved on with their lives when they realized that it wasn't nearly as bad as they thought, and that a little bit of that targeted help was the way to go. targeted protections of those who are vulnerable to the COVID-19, but otherwise people could get on with their lives. And so I've rebuilt my life here and I'm doing well and enjoying it. And so I really technically have thrived. And in that sense, I was halfway out of California when I got the phone call from my dissident filmmaker friends going, hey, Tom Wood suggested this should be made. And we think we'd like you to direct it. And I thought, you know, I mean, I've spent my entire life preparing for this moment. So, okay, let's do it. And it's been a real joy, Tom. It's been a real amazing experience. I mean, we raised over $300,000 in that first year. And we've gone on to raise another 150, and we're raising a final 50 for a total of $500,000 for this project. That alone, I mean, just the humbling experience of raising that much money, because there are people who saw the need for this story. They trusted us as the storytellers who were going to take what needed to be said and get it into a format that can reach as many people as possible and really criticize the top-down nature of the lockdowns, and that there is a need for both objective reality and the subjective artist's input to navigate the future. And both of those were getting crushed. So it was neat to sort of leave LA and have really the biggest piece of my life's work as a filmmaker to drop in my lap like this to help my community, help my fellow Americans, and try and tell a really good story about what happened.
You know, you hear all the time about some people are persuaded by one kind of argument and some people are persuaded by other kinds. So I'm the kind of person who's persuaded by a really devastatingly effective chart. I look at a chart that tells me the opposite story from what the establishment is telling me. Yeah. And I think, well, then I can't believe what they're telling me because this chart can't possibly lie. These are the real numbers. But on the other hand, there are some people whose eyes glaze over at charts.
Sure.
But they're deeply moved by people's individual stories. And so what I like about your project is it seems to me, even though I have not viewed any portion of it yet, that you're trying to balance both styles of argument.
Yeah, we are. We have a traditional storyline. We have a hero, a main character, a host, and that's Clifton Duncan, who we thought was perfect for the role. And
absolutely, in every possible way.
Every possible way. He lived
it. I mean, because he lived it. He made sacrifices. And also being an actor, he's comfortable in this spotlight, and he has a perfect broadcasting voice. He's got everything.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll say that, I mean, one of the things about this type of project is we bring in the hard-hitting facts and we bring in the hard-hitting science. We track it and the narrative of what occurred, but we have a wry sense of humor and we have some great moments in it that you have to bring some humor in to really sort of help people feel the full gamut of emotions. I mean, we also have some very profound, very heartbreaking moments about families who lost loved ones. But we have that full spectrum, and that just, it opens people much more to, because I mean, part of what we're trying to do is we're trying to show people what it is to change your mind. We have what we call the epiphany storyline featuring a woman named Jen Reisman, who's a child psychologist who, like Clifton, was 100% in on the lockdowns. I mean, they were like, they sort of talked about they were the lockdown police and masking police. They were very much thought, we will comply and everyone else is going to be dead in the streets. I mean, they had that type of mindset in the beginning. And then, you know, for Clifton, when he started to see, like, this doesn't quite make sense, and I question this, and that culminated with the vaccines, is where he stood up and said, no. Jen Reisman could see that the children were suffering hugely, hugely. I mean, I was watching this with my own nephews, and she had a daughter, and she was a single mom, and she could see that, you know, when schools are going to reopen, and it's going to be okay, we just have to last. And they kept pushing it, and mission drift, and schools were not opening, and how it would devastate her daughter. It would devastate the children she worked with. And she had to deal nonstop with suicidal ideation, you know, children looking to hurt themselves. And she had to do it through a Zoom call. This is not healthy. This is not worth the damage of whatever the supposed pros of these lockdowns were for containing COVID-19. It did not make sense. And so we have these threads. We have about 13 different story threads moving through this. But all the while, we have this wry sense of humor and this interesting dialogue that occurs between two main groups. It's Clifton, and then we have Nick Hudson of Pandata.
I love that guy, too.
Yeah. Oh, he's amazing. He's amazing. I got to fly to Cape
Town. South Africa.
I flew to Cape Town, South Africa to film him there. And he plays, in terms of, in the movie parlance, he's the mentor. So we have Clifton's our hero, journeyman, going through the process. And then Nick Hudson comes in as his mentor and sort of starts as the science communicator. So Clifton sort of is the human interest storyline. And then Nick Hudson sort of mentors him on the science. So as a heavy hitting science comes in from Jay Bhattacharya, we also have the illustrious David Katz formerly of Yale, who's a syndicated columnist and appears in the New York Times. He's a chronic disease specialist. He and Jay Bhattacharya are sort of our, how we triangulate the hard science. And then Nick translates that for Clifton's understanding, because Clifton feels he has an understanding. And then there's times he's like, oh, wait, this is not what I thought it was. And like, it's like, yeah, so science is a complicated thing. It's not quite what you think it is. It's a pursuit of truth. It's not the actual arbiter of truth per se. So it's constantly being corrected, because freedom of speech, curiosity, the ability to question are the fundamentals of science and the codification of science. So he walks him through all that. And it's really interesting. And then we have this YouTuber, Sidney Watson. Oh, actually, I mean, to your point, Tom, in terms of numbers, we're very ambitious with this. So when people wonder what, like, why these things are so expensive, I insisted that what we needed to do was come up with an animation process that was three-dimensional, vivid, fascinating, global, and real-time statistic, perfectly accurate, that we could plug any data set into. So we actually developed, I worked with a group, we worked with statisticians in South Africa for Nick's networks. We worked with animators in Los Angeles, and we had coders in Tennessee, all working to create a system so that we could make a globe in which you could see the real-time effects of COVID moving across the planet, where you could actually see, it was like watching a red tidal wave moving around the planet. You could see the first wave, you could see the second wave, and you could see the third wave. And so it's this incredible animation. And then you have Nick Hudson walking Clifton through it, explaining how it works. And he even explains, he's like, now this is an incredible thing. Now it's difficult for science to see this. So normally we want to come down to what we would call a pairwise comparison. Let's compare these two things. But that has some shortcomings, and that's why this doesn't quite work. So we walk through a whole series of pairwise comparisons, which eventually leads to, like, so the real way to do data analysis is scatter plots. And we actually get this incredible sort of 8-minute statistical lesson from Nick Hudson explaining it to Clifton, who's fascinated by everything he's saying. And we move through these three unbelievable types of animation that we created to portray the COVID data in a way that no one has seen before, and in a way that the camera can move through it in 3D space. It's very, very compelling. And I have a feeling you're going to enjoy that section in particular. And that was all part of my plan, where I really wanted to personify COVID. And so we also have, on the flip side, for your mind, we have that. We have the incredible statistical analysis and animation and numbers. But then we also have a character. We have sort of a Steamboat Willie Covey character. We've developed, there's an animated character. You know, I have nephews. I want them to enjoy this just as much. And there is this personified creature or virus called Covey. And it takes up residence inside of the lungs of a young girl. And there's a whole animated sequence about that. So we have this two-phase process of personifying Kobe, so we can talk about it in a way that isn't just, it's this unseen force, this unseen fear that we've all been living with, that's been held over our heads by all the news media and all the politicians and policymakers. Like, you must do this because this fear, this horrible thing is looming out there. And so we've used the numbers, we've used the animation, we've used our process to develop stuff to make it real, make it something we can talk about, and something we can be reasonable about, and something that brings back dialogue to our community. There's a chunk of what we're up to.
I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to see it. Now, the fact that it's 5 episodes, did you do that because the story itself is so long, or is it because in each of the 5, you're emphasizing a different aspect of the issue?
It's a little bit of both, more of the latter. I mean, we did write an outline script. You know, there are cut scenes and whatnot. And we just realized that there was just so much. There's so much that happened. It's hard to, we're really not geared to remember things. And I think that the amnesia, the sort of enforced amnesia that the mainstream narrative sort of imposes on society is pretty obvious to everyone these days, but we still are subject to it. And you forget how things happen and how that's the most intense thing for a week or two, and then it goes away. And we started writing everything down. We just wanted to try and capture, we wanted to just capture a chronological list of what occurred. And it got so long, so fast, with so many discrete moments that were either missed or lost or overplayed or underplayed, that we realized that our initial thought was to make a single feature film. And we thought, you know what? It inflated to a 5-episode pilot docuseries pretty quickly, because we thought, we want to establish the initial world. In terms of science alone, we want to define terms as we use them, then use them as we move into it. Because there's been a lot of sort of science pizzazz thrown out there that is beyond people's comprehension, so they don't know what's being talked about. And I think it obfuscates the dialogue. And so we introduced the terms deliberately and then use them properly and then use them consistently. And then you have someone like Nick Hudson to remind us the use and what we've learned so far. And then we see Clifton Duncan understand it. And that comes along. We give people that sort of scientific literacy to discuss it. And the idea being, like, Tom, you watch it or my nephews watch it. And then I would say that was, you know, some of my target audiences right there that I've been operating with. You could sit down with a bunch of, you know, 8 to 13-year-olds and have a perfectly informed conversation about what happened because you have a shared vernacular from the show itself. And so we wanted to get that established in the pilot as well as the dialogue. So as we move forward, I started to mention Sydney Watson, the YouTuber. She's sort of our time traveler where she's the news anchor, kind of bringing us up to the news of the hour from the day, you know, back and past. And then she's also interviewing this woman, Jen Reisman, about her evolution, or her changing of her mind. Then this is very strong sort of divine feminine in terms of character, where we see these two women speaking about their experiences, and they were technically on the opposite side of it. And them just going through it and saying, hey, remember that part? Oh yeah, I remember that part. And I remember then this happened and that happened. And it just brings it all to life. Again, like this whole idea of personifying, bringing things back to life, not letting things pass into the sort of dusty historical archives. Like, this was real life that we all experienced. Everyone has their version of it. And we just want to bring that forth. And the dialogue forms where we want to reestablish what it is to have a conversation. The art of the conversation has really suffered. And people are, you know, on their computer. They don't speak to each other. They've learned to not, oh, if your source is faulty, my source is correct, but I'm not going to talk to you about it. So our Clifton, Nick Hudson, Sydney Watson, and our whole host of characters, they start to speak to each other. So by the end, there's actually a scene with our three main characters all having a conversation about what they learned. So the idea was, as the series moves forward, the conversation continues, the dialogue continues, so that by episode 4 and 5, we're having big conversations with big heavyweights about what occurred. And we want the audience to feel like they're there, part of the conversation, and really gleaning wisdom. You know, when you take that emotional aspect and you take knowledge and you put it together in that same space in the form of a conversation, wisdom really gets imparted. So we're hoping to really capture the wisdom gained from what we all went through these past few years so that we don't have to repeat it. We don't want to repeat history. We don't feel that this needs to happen again, and we feel lessons can be learned there.
I have had a number of people who responded to my email newsletter alerting them to the premiere in Orlando tell me that I can't get to Orlando, so now what do I do? So what's the process going to be for getting this out to everybody else?
Sure, yeah. We have sort of a multi-phase distribution plan. I mean, the initial phase we're doing, again, on February 8th. If you go to followthescienceseries.com, you can register there to become a donor to be part of that. So that'll be a great sneak peek, and we're seeking feedback from our viewers there. The worldwide premiere, again, is in Orlando with you on February 22nd. And then after that, we're talking, in this day and age with like the main streamers, like our main target is a Hulu style, Netflix style streamer. And we have an agent, we have a great publicity group and an agent who's working with us, and we'll be walking this property into them and to see how far up the ladder we can get. And so we've been targeting that all along. However, we of course are aware that it is hard to know what sort of with corporate censorship it being what it is today, how far we can get it up the ladder. We feel that it's a good product, a good property that they would be interested in. But there are other avenues, and we've assembled a really amazing team, and we're negotiating with a mid-level streamer right now, so we know that it can't be taken down, and it will ultimately be released for free, or at least, you know, with modest credentials and to the public so that everyone can see it. And then we'll be going on tour with it. We'll probably go to Texas. There'll be one up here in New Hampshire. I mean, really, the Orlando, Florida is sort of getting everything ready, having the first screening, and then we'll have that package and we'll be able to actually, if people are interested, they could actually host screenings in their town. So those types of things will be coming online fairly soon. And I'll probably do a tour of the main cities of the United States and maybe get back down to South Africa and whatnot, and just try and get this in front of as many eyeballs as possible. So we have a multifaceted plan of distribution, and we're hoping for something as high as Hulu.
Well, that's great. That's great. I can't wait to see exactly where it goes. I hope you're not like one of my favorite musicians, Steven Wilson, who produces his own music. And it's a time-consuming process. You have to listen to the songs over and over and over again. He says, by the time I'm done with it, I don't ever want to hear these songs again.
Sure,
I hope you're not that way with your film projects.
Yeah, you definitely crawl across the finish line. And I mean, it's always important to have someone else promote it because you're the last person who wants to see it when you're the maker. But we have a really stellar team that's coming together. I did a director's cut of the pilot and then handed it off to a great new editor and his team. And they're working furiously to up the level that much more. It's going to be a very high energy piece. And so I'm very excited. So I too am actually excited to see it again because it's going to be reinvented once again. I mean, filmmaking is a collective art form or a collaborative art form, I prefer to say. And I'm so happy to have done my part. And now I'm out in front sort of doing the promo part, but I'm thrilled that there's a bunch of people who are staying up late and working hard and doing what they need to do to make this thing amazing. Because it's not just a good project that people are happy to be part of. It's also that, but everyone involved. We've built a huge network of artists and filmmakers and supporters who see the need for this, see the historical importance for this, and a desire to use this as a tool to have the conversations they always wanted to have with their family and their community and their society. So everyone's really dedicated. I mean, we have assiduously spent the money in the form of we've stretched it well past its actual $500,000 value. We're pulling off well over $1 million production value on this. And that's why we feel that we should have a good shot at one of these top streamers like Hulu. It's beyond a passion project. This is one of the most important projects we've all worked on in our lifetimes and in our careers. And it's an open discussion about that. And it's always very inspiring to have that. And for me, as an advocate of freedom of expression, it's exactly what I want to be doing. And I'm thrilled that this is the story that I'm telling with my friends.
Well, let me end with a call to action. I mentioned the redirect link, tomwoods.com/documentary. That's if you'd like to attend the premiere, February 22nd, 2023, in Orlando. I have to say the year because people listen to these 3 years from now. Sure, I don't want them to be driving around Orlando looking for a theater that isn't there. But that's the link for that. And as I mentioned, also at that link, if you want to help the project, you can do that. But rather than let Eventbrite take a small fraction of that, I'm also going to have at tomwoods.com/2269, not only the link to sign up to attend, but also a direct link if you want to help the filmmakers directly as they finish up this project. It would be very, very gratefully received. And I hope you'll join me in supporting this important project. So the key link really is tomwoods.com/2269, the show notes page for this episode. Well, Hawk, thanks for your time, for your effort, and can't wait to see that first episode.
Well, and Tom, thank you for being the origin of this idea and the angel investor and making it happen. And we are all thrilled to be on the same team with you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much again. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free. And we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.